Tuesday morning. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter's. That is Nick Wright. And even though it is a Tuesday morning, we have a lot of football still to discuss and some basketball sprinkled in as well. Big rumor mill swirling in the NBA. Sir Tom Brady says he is ready for the hard road ahead because it will be a hard road ahead for those Patriots. But we're going to start with some real-life football that happened last night. They call it Monday Night Football. It is the Panthers hosting the Saints. It is Drew taking on Cam. It is the first quarter, 4th and 2 at the 50-yard line. Norv Turner dipping into the bag of tricks. Dials this up. Christian McCaffrey, the pass that goes for the touchdown. It's 7-0 Panthers. 4th quarter, Alvin Kamara capping off an 11-play drive with a 16-yard TD run. Take the lead. But the Panthers hung around. Down 3, one last chance. The drive ends with an incomplete pass on 4th down. Saints hold on to win. It wasn't a dominating win, but they will take it. They are now one win away from clinching the 1 seed. And on the other side, the Panthers' playoff hopes all but done. Here is that guy right there, Cam Newton, after the game.
I think it's disheartening for me, you know, just because so much invested time that you put in. You know, I don't, you know, want to, you know, play the "woe is me" game, but, you know, we just got to be better. I got to be better. I got to be better. I got to be better. And that's what's so frustrating when you want it so bad and you push, you put so much on your plate, and you know it doesn't come down to you, but at the end of the day, you just got to uphold your end of the bargain. Obviously, my arm hasn't allowed me to do a lot of practice. Been on a pitch count for a long time. But at the end of the day, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, that's not no scapegoat. That's not, you know, something that I want to, you know, people to bail me out on. It's just something that, you know, is reality.
All right, Nick, so Cam actually spent a good deal of that press conference talking about his arm and how it has been bothering him. My question to you is, what has happened not just to Cam Newton, we heard about his arm, but to the Panthers as a whole?
Well, so the Panthers as a whole, up until very recently, their defense had not been up to the standard we were used to in the Ron Rivera era. Yesterday, obviously, the defense was spectacular. But along this losing streak, you saw a defense that had been giving up the second most points of this decade of Panther football. The Greg Olsen injury hurt him. Some of the offensive line injuries hurt him. But what Cam talked about right there is the key, and I'm glad that he finally is publicly acknowledging it. Cam Newton is hurt. He has been clearly hurt for the last month plus of football. I know, see, you spent time with him. You saw it, I'm sure, up close and personal. Cam Newton, he was in a 7-point loss to Tampa Bay in the final play of the game at midfield. They took Cam Newton out of the game and put in Taylor Heinicke to throw the final Hail Mary. He is not able to get any type of zip on throws more than 10 yards downfield, and that is not only affecting his passing and his accuracy, which has always been spotty even this year when it was on an uptick, but he's not as much of a running threat. If it hurts you to throw the football, I can only imagine how much it would hurt you to run leading with your shoulder. So one of the quarterbacks in the league that we asked to do the most for his team has been physically compromised, and it has totally submarined any chances this Panther team has.
Well, the offensive line from the beginning was hurt by injury. And then you have Olsen in and out of the lineup, now out for the rest of the season. And then you also have the other players, Devin Funches and the other receivers. Are they really developing? And it's hard for this young group, Curtis Samuel, high draft pick from Ohio State, DJ Moore. You see him developing, but when this offense is not productive the way they want it to be, because it's hard to be physical. Now, Norv Turner and his son, Scott, the quarterback coach there, they've done a great job. They've improved Cam as a passer, but it's hard to improve your passing game when you're absent of practice, when you don't have your frontline guys in there to develop that continuity. And they don't have a number one wide receiver. They are all guys trying to develop, even though Funchess has been there a couple of years. DJ Moore, when you don't have your franchise quarterback and Cam Newton potentially Wednesday and Thursday practices, he's only going Friday. You can't predict the speed because you can't simulate that in practice to what it's going to be in the game. You saw Christian McCaffrey. He had an angle, a running back angle, where he goes out to the outside off the tackle and then shoots inside the defender on a 3rd and 12, wide open. Cam leads him too far. That type of timing when you're out of practice is not going to be there. And Cam is doing the right thing. It's not for NFL players to complain about injuries. That's the way it's been. That's the legacy of the league. And it provides a certain amount of toughness for your team because the team knows that he's injured. Cam Newton has done a remarkable thing. He's meeting with the training staff. He takes the whole training staff out to dinner on Thursday. Well, he has the food catered inside the locker room. People don't know about this because he's been spending so much time with that training staff. He just does that out of appreciation. So Cam Newton might be hurt as a quarterback, but you can see the growth in other areas. And that's what I saw in that press conference when the overall humility of, man, this game is tough. I've been banged up all year. I'm not going to make excuses. And for people who are broadcasting games, they're not going to make excuses for Cam because it's not their position to be able to do.
I thought you made, we were talking about this before the show, you made an interesting point, which is we've talked a lot about Cam's mechanics and where Cam has a different throwing motion than a lot of guys and where Cam's footwork isn't up to par with what the very elite quarterbacks are. And you made an analogy about a baseball pitcher and about we see all these shoulder and elbow surgeries with baseball. We rarely see it with football. But because of the way Cam throws the football, he might be more susceptible to shoulder injuries than your typical quarterback.
Well, he doesn't utilize his gifts. He doesn't utilize his big legs and that torque that you can have throwing with your legs. Because typically, if you're late with the football, it's either I didn't recognize what coverage they were in or I'm not utilizing my legs and my legs aren't ready. And when you see with Cam, when he tries to force the ball, he forces the ball with his upper torso. So you can see him put a lot of stress on his shoulder. And poor footwork leads to poor mechanics, which leads to poor throwing motion, which lead to soreness, which also lead ultimately to injury. There's a reason why my shoulder is messed up today is because I played a couple years with a bad shoulder, had surgery on it after trying to play with it. That is part of being in the NFL, and that's what Cam Newton and the Panthers are experiencing this year.
And as a result, they're all but done now from the postseason. I want to talk to you about the Saints. You said something interesting when Chris Caney was out here yesterday. He said, keep an eye on the Saints. I'm not completely sold on this offense. They have not been playing well. And for the third straight game, they definitely did struggle offensively. Did that surprise you last night going up against this Panthers team?
No, it didn't surprise me. They struggled the last 5 weeks. They're all pro tackle Tyron Armstead. He's been out since week number 10. So week number 11 through 15, they've really only played one good game. That was against Philadelphia, a complete game. The rest of the time, they've struggled. And all their numbers have suffered. Michael Thomas has gotten a lot of attention because he's 28% of their offense. Alvin Kamara, he's a big part of their offense too, but after that, they're missing. Teddy Ginn last year was 13% of their offense. Mark Ingram, he was 13%. He's not that. They don't have anyone else contributing 10% to their offensive productivity in the offensive line, which was great. Right now, last night, they lost Max Unger, the great center that
no
they have.
No depth on that line.
There's no team that has depth on the line. Depth. But we forget about the Saints because when we talk about them being productivity, we talk about Sean Payton. We talk about Drew Brees. We talk about Michael Thomas. We talk about the running backs. We never talk about their offensive line. Their offensive line potentially is one of the best, if not the best, in the league. They have not played up to that, and we've seen that since week 11. The overall productivity has suffered.
They put a major investment in that offensive line starting years ago when they traded Jimmy Graham at the peak of his powers for Max Unger, who has been an excellent player for them. Teron Armstead, we talk about a lot of left tackles. He's a guy whose name had not been mentioned as much, but your friends at Pro Football Focus had him rated as the number one left tackle in football, and it is a very clear line of demarcation. It's the first 10 weeks of the year, which was 9 games for the Saints, where their offense is averaging 37 points a game. He goes out of the lineup. Since then, their offense is averaging 25 points per game. The reason they've been okay is these last 5 weeks, the defense has been extraordinary. Defense was great again last night. In the loss to the Cowboys, the defense was excellent. The thing that I think people need to watch most closely, particularly with Max Unger being hurt and with Teron Armstead not back yet, is the last 3 weeks, Drew Brees has not forget playing at the best level of his career as he was through the first 10 games of the year. Last 3 weeks, we can show it to you, he's been a different player. His completion percentage is still high, but down from the all-time record. The yards per pass is dramatically lower. He has more interceptions last 3 weeks than he had in the first 11 games of the season. And that passer rating stat is not lying there. So all of a sudden, when he hasn't had as much time and as much support in front of him, and they've been playing some tough defenses in this stretch, except for Tampa's mixed in there, and they're not a tough defense, Drew Brees has been compromised to a degree.
Two things affected Drew Brees the most. That's that offensive line, because people are getting closer to him. And when you're height challenged like Drew Brees, that's something that will affect your ability to be able to throw the ball and see down the field. And they do not have a number two receiver. They tried it. They went and signed Dez Bryant. It didn't work. Went out and signed Brandon Marshall. It didn't work. They are looking for a number two receiver opposite of Michael Thomas. Defenses are starting to clamp down on him, not giving him the big explosive game. So that will affect the way they do offense. So the Saints, watch out. These last couple games are very, very important to create some momentum offensively going into the playoffs.
All that being said, Saints pick up their league-best 12th win of the season with a win over the Carolina Panthers. Take a break. Talk basketball on the other side. Coming up, will Anthony Davis be joining LeBron in the Lakers? Might not be a lock. That's next on First Things First.
There's something about auctions that makes shopping so much more fun. For sports fans, it probably has something to do with the competition and suspense that auctions provide. But who wants to spend time researching where their nearest auction house is and then make the trek all the way there? I definitely don't. And that's why I love Pristine Auction, an online sports auction house where you can buy and sell sports memorabilia from the comfort of your own home. Pristine Auction runs tons of different auction formats, including multiple weekly auctions, a premium monthly auction, as well as daily and 10-minute auctions. They guarantee the authenticity of all of their items, and everything you purchase comes from only the most trusted sources. And the best part? It's so affordable. I just saw an autographed Ricky Stenhouse Jr. photo that sold for only $6. Go check out Pristine Auction now. You'll be hooked. It's free to register, free to bid, and you only pay for the items you win. That's pristineauction.com. And when you register, be sure to select First Things First podcast from the drop-down menu in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Let them know we sent you. Make sure you select First Things First podcast from the drop-down menu when you go to pristineauction.com.
Welcome back. We'll get to LeBron and the Lakers in just a second. But first, Monday Night Football. Panthers Saints, Christian McCaffrey showing off the arm. 50-yard touchdown pass to Chris Mannertz.
I believe this made McCaffrey the second player since the merger to have 50 yards passing, 50 yards rushing, and 50 yards receiving in a game. I mean, this was fourth down. They hadn't run this exact play all year. Saints not ready for it. Best play of the game for Carolina.
Yeah, it was great. Great design. Great design. He had to be that wide open because he was super slow.
In the NBA, Jeremy Grant drives, delivers the aggressive rim-rocking dunk.
He's been very good for them this year. He's been a nice rotation guy, player out of Syracuse, was just a defender and a leaper, added a little more to his game. I like him this season. That Thunder team's a good team now.
If they can continue to grow offensively, especially younger players, because right now the Thunder, best defensive team in the NBA.
More NBA Bucks Pistons. Giannis spins, hammers home his own one-handed dunk.
He and Steph have been statistically the two best players in the league so far this year. LeBron and Anthony Davis, third and fourth. But Giannis playing basically every game, leading that team top three in the East. Right now, he's probably the league MVP. He's been so good, man. So
Steph,
good.
When Steph qualifies for the number of games played, Steph has been so, so special. Only thing eliminating him
is the games.
The number of games.
All right, finally, James Harden, big night for him. Throwing it down over Rudy Gobert. I mean, I almost blacked out. It was such a good play.
Well, James Harden's gone now. We missed it.
Oh, okay, so let's stick with the NBA. It was play out this season. We missed it because I was...
Oh, now it's back. There he is. There he is, James Harden. Part of his monster night. What are you throwing? Hit him for 47?
47
right hand.
Points.
You're not going to see that. People are trying to force him to his right because he doesn't shoot with his right, let alone finish at the rim. This was a spectacular finish.
And doing it over maybe the league's best defender in Rudy Gobert.
What was the hand thing, Nick?
That one, I don't know. Maybe he was showing him he did it with the right hand. Maybe that's what it was. He usually goes to the nose, pretends he has a nosebleed.
Sticking with the NBA, as we play out the season awaiting LeBron's next superstar teammate in L.A., we learn this, a new report that the Lakers are shying away from dealing their young players this season so that they can trade for Anthony Davis this summer. Davis can't officially become a free agent until the summer of 2020. Now, this summer, keep in mind, the Pelicans can offer AD an extension worth a whopping $230 million. Nick, what do you think? Should AD be the Lakers' main target?
Absolutely, unequivocally, yes. And this is the pairing I've been talking about for some time, and I'm far from the only person that's been talking about it, even though my advice to the Pelicans has always been, hold on to Anthony Davis for dear life. But they have now had 7 years to build a legitimate contender around a player who, since he came into the league, year three for Anthony Davis, he was top five MVP candidate. He's been great from the word go, and you look in the standings, oh, they're 15-16. And so when you hear about the Lakers potentially making a midseason move for a guy the caliber of Bradley Beal, who's a nice player, one of the reasons that would be so insane is if Anthony Davis is going to execute what is called his pre-agency, his pre-free agency, and just say to a team, I'm not re-signing here, so if you want to get anything for me, you have to trade me, similar to what happened with Kawhi, similar to what happened with Paul George. He can really dictate it by then saying, I'm also, by the way, only signing an extension in one place. And if they have reason to believe it's Los Angeles, then of course they should hold on to all their young guys and then pair LeBron with the best big man he would ever have been paired with by an enormous margin. This is if he wants to go there, it's to me an absolute no-brainer.
Yeah, not only the best big man, but the best player. I think he's better than Dwayne Wade. At the top of his game, and Dwayne Wade at the top of his game, Anthony Davis is a better player, and there's no matchup for him in the league. There are people who could guard Dwayne Wade.
Sure.
There's all kind of wing defenders. I don't think that if I'm the Lakers, let's not forget, before LeBron, it was all based on let's not overreact, let's not panic. This is all about two summers. All right, about the summer of 18 and the summer of 19. I do believe that LeBron and AD are a good match, but what is it going to cost you compared to getting one of the other players? And I believe that Kawhi is a better match because it's not going to cost you as much. He wants to come to L.A. There's not all these particulars. It's just a matter of, is it the Lakers or is it the Clippers? We don't know about Anthony Davis. We don't know if he's going to force his way out. We don't know all these things. So for me, on paper, it might be the perfect match, but the perfect match for LeBron is Kawhi because you need wing defenders. We don't know who's going to be in Golden State, but we know they're not going to have a center. So I'm not going to have to worry about Anthony Davis in that matchup. But as far as LeBron, LeBron is not an elite defender anymore. So you need people who can defend the wings. And I think it's more important to get Kawhi without those draft picks and have those young players the flexibility on the roster, and because he's such an elite defender. If KD stays in Golden State, oh, you need someone like Kawhi compared to someone like AD. And it's going to take AD and some of your younger players who are wing defenders also.
All right, so to C's point, Kawhi Leonard is a free and clear free agent this summer. And the Lakers have carved out enough cap space. So what you're talking about is keeping Lonzo and Ingram and Kuzma, along with LeBron, obviously. Now you would lose Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Rondo, who cares? Like, you would lose those guys. They would plan to lose those guys. And then add Kawhi. As opposed with Anthony Davis, where you would be sending out Ingram and Kuzma and Lonzo. At least two of the three, maybe all three of them, to bring over Anthony Davis. Now, if you were to do that, you would then have some cap space to add an additional player, but it wouldn't be a player of Kawhi Leonard's caliber. So I understand the math there. The thing is this, Kawhi is going to make his free agency decision before the Pelicans are in a position where they would be trading Anthony Davis. So I'm of the belief they will know. I don't think they would. I don't think there's a scenario where Kawhi says, I want to sign with the Lakers, and they say, no, we're saving this spot to trade for Anthony Davis. But so the Kawhi factor is a real factor. The one spot I'll disagree with you on is you need wing defenders unless you have one of the very best rim defenders in the league, in which case if you have him, Rudy Gobert, Embiid, there is a level of where your defense automatically gets better by having a rim protector.
But with small ball, they draw the five out to the three-point line, and you lose the rim protector. And sure, also, you're going to lose your bench. So if you try to get a rim protector, you're going to lose your bench. You're going to lose your younger players. To me, it doesn't add up. And Anthony Davis, besides having the same agent as – he's never said he wanted to go to L.A. He's got a house in L.A. We know Kawhi wants to go to L.A. That's been put out there. It's just a matter, is it the Lakers or is it the Clippers? So for me, what's more realistic compared to fantasy basketball? I believe Kawhi is going to be in Los Angeles without any compensation.
What about this Laker plan, this 2-3 year plan that we talk so much about? Is it contingent on keeping their young players? I mean, are the Lakers seeing something in these young guys that maybe we haven't seen? We talked about Brandon Ingram trying to really make,
headway. The Lakers' plan is keeping the young players be a bonus. The Lakers' plan is very simply, step one, get LeBron. Step two, get another top six guy.
Right. But in the meantime, that middle part is develop the younger players so that they are still an asset, because the more they develop, the better they play as far as free agent. And let's just say they try to build the Golden State model. I believe Kyle Kuzma can be someone like Clay. Not a shooter, but can be that dependable guy, can get you 18 to 24 a night. So I believe Kuzma can be that guy. So it becomes important that they continue to develop. And we're seeing that with Kyle Kuzma playing with LeBron.
And the Kuzma development, as disappointing as Ingram's lack of development has been, Kuzma's development's been a positive. And we didn't talk about it because it was a football Monday and the Lakers had lost in such awful fashion on Sunday. But LeBron and Lonzo, what they did Saturday was notable. But what was more notable is LeBron once again taking every opportunity to build Lonzo up, to say he and I have the exact same passing gene. Like, talking about Lonzo, he is talking about Lonzo as if they are going to be playing together for some time. So I do think the young players are important. I'm not trying to say they're not. But you asked about the Lakers' plan. The Lakers' plan is, by any means necessary, get a second superstar to pair with LeBron James, because I do believe they think the lure of LeBron, the city, and the franchise, if they do lose some of their bench, they will be able to take on the Miami Heat model to a degree, which is veteran guys like Mike Miller or Ray Allen wanting to come there at the tail end of their career to play for a discount because of the city, chance to win championships, and the historic franchise. So I think that part will even itself out. But there's only so many superstars in the world.
Right.
Kawhi and Anthony Davis are two of the six. Steph's not available. Harden's not available. Durant, we don't think, is going there. That's your list almost. So when we talk about these two guys, it really is just these two guys.
LeBron gave Lonzo so much credit after the Charlotte game that he forgot to play basketball in Washington. John Wall cooked him for 40 points. So we didn't have time yesterday to talk about it on a football Monday, but yeah, he was concussed.
Good thing we brought it up on a basketball Tuesday.
Points.
Coming up, stink in the house. Mark Chlereth joins us to discuss whether or not we are seeing the end of the New England Patriots as we know them. That's next. First things first. Back here on First Things First, we are now joined by three-time Super Bowl champ, all-around awesome guy, Mark Chlereth.
Thank you. Welcome to the show.
It's great
to
have
you. Guys. Good to be with you guys.
Good. We're talking some Patriots this morning. A lot of people had a lot to say about the Pats and their current state of affairs after dropping their last two games. This team now 3-5 on the road. First time since 2009 the Pats have finished below 500 on the road. And how about this? Only one team has ever won the Super Bowl with a losing road record in the regular season. That was the 2010 Packers. Here's what Tom Brady had to say about the Patriots' road woes.
I certainly don't feel like we can't win on the road. We had our chances yesterday. We certainly had our chance in Miami. I mean, I'm not worried about, playing on the road. It's, we just got to win. We got to win at home. We got to beat Buffalo. And that's where we have to get back to work, get on the practice field, and go out there and win the game and try to win the division. That's just our first goal.
All right, Stink, this isn't a question we normally would ask in late December, but are you worried about the New England Patriots?
Absolutely, I'm worried about the New England Patriots because, one, I mean, I think you look at them as a football team the last 2 weeks, they have not been able to shut down the run. So, when you look at them, at some point, if you can't shut it down, then what happens? It opens everything else up to that defense, and that defense has been worn out the last couple of weeks. They've made mistakes that have been kind of un-Belichick-like. Mm-hmm. And we saw that with the, with the overtime, the whole hook and ladder thing in overtime to Miami. Yeah. So they've been
Tom Brady in the second quarter of that game, thinking he got a timeout and taking the sack.
Right.
You know, so there have been a couple little non-New England type things the last couple
absolutely.
Weeks.
Absolutely. So, and then obviously, you know, I look at them up front. They're not very good up front. They haven't been very good up front, especially from a protection standpoint. And it seems to me that teams are looking at them like, hey, we're going to just lock down Gronkowski in the middle. We're going to double team him in the middle. And we feel like we can survive one-on-one in other places. So let's get make sure we take Edelman out of the middle of the field. Let's take Gronkowski out of the middle of the field. We feel like we can win on the edges. And we feel like because we'll play that press man, we'll play man on the outside, we're going to get to your quarterback because your offensive line can't hold up. And when they go on the road, that seems to be the formula that really gives them fits.
And here's the reason why it is not overreaction. It's not hyperbole at all to talk about that this is a different iteration of the Pats than we've seen in the last 20 years. Forget road home. Five losses. They have been to one Super Bowl with five losses. Their first one. That team, nobody thought that team was overwhelmingly dominant early. They had a quarterback injury. They were two touchdown underdogs in that Super Bowl. They were very fortunate that that year 11-5 was good enough to get a bye, and they were able to carry that momentum after the Tuck Rule game into the Super Bowl and shock the Rams. But the last time they had five losses or more was 2009. That was also a year they played in the wild card round and got beat by the Baltimore Ravens. The year before that they had five losses was, oh, wait, that was 2008 when Brady wasn't there and they missed the playoffs entirely. The year before that when they had five losses was 2002 when they had seven and they missed the playoffs entirely. This team is never in this position. So I think it would be foolish for us to take a Pats team that is in a position they have not been in a decade and assign them all the faith that we have assigned Pats teams over the past decade. In the last 2 years leading into this, they had five losses combined. They were 27-5. Mm-hmm. So home, road, wherever it is, a Pats team not having a playoff spot locked up going into week 16, not having the division locked up going into week 16, that hasn't happened for a decade. So, of course, we should be concerned that this is a different version.
But the reason why, and everything you guys are saying is absolute true. But there's an overwhelming truth, a reason why Jenna and I, like, yeah, okay, all that's true. Yeah, they're not as good. But they do have that coach, and they do have that quarterback. And we are talking about a tournament. This is not the NBA. Don't have to beat them 3 out of 5. Don't have to beat them 4 out of 7. Right. No,
game
two or three.
One game.
It's one game. And that guy, Tom Brady, is going to have the ball 65 to 70 plays. Does he have that last game in him? Like, does he have that in him? We know that Belichick, they're going to be more buttoned up. They're not going to have 10 penalties like they had against the Steelers. And the reason why Jenna, we sit around, we're breaking it down because Jenna's like, Chris, I know they're not as good, but, like, they always do something. This is why we have faith. Chiefs, they don't scare us. They leaking oil, trying to get it. They don't have their running back. Mm-hmm. They can't run the ball. Can they do what the last 2 weeks have done? That's going to be put in question. And Andy Reid in the matchup against Belichick and that fan base, they are terrified of what could happen in the playoffs because of their lack of success.
The Chiefs have the opposite playoff history of the Patriots.
Okay.
No good memories, just awful, horrific losses. One of them to your team.
Let's go to the mentee. Let's go to the Texans. Yeah. All right. Y'all afraid of this offense? Huh? They're not going to be able to run the ball. They're running back. Lamar, he's hurt. Now I'm worried about that defensive front. All right, we might have to go there because they might have the number 2 seed. All right, we just played Pittsburgh. We know they don't scare you. What about the Chargers? That little soccer stadium they're playing in, how much a home field advantage is that? They're going to have 30,000 Patriots fans out there. So there's reason. When I go up and down this list, there ain't no dominant teams in the NFL.
I think the one thing that shocks you, though, is we're so accustomed, Chris, to the Patriots after Thanksgiving never losing. And playing clean football and not getting penalized and not making mental gaps.
Yeah, I'm preaching all the theory to people, and people are pointing their finger at it. It ain't working this year. Yeah. And I'm like, but it normally works.
And don't they at least deserve the benefit of the doubt because they have found a way somehow, some way over the last couple years? They haven't been great this year. From the beginning of the year, they haven't been great.
But somehow, some way, the last couple years has been they're the one seed. They're 14-2. Like, Pats fans like to act like, oh, we get counted out every year. You're 14-2 and 13-3. Who the hell's counting the Pats out in any of the last few Decembers? Nobody. Like, the only time they haven't been to the Super Bowl in the last 4 years was up against a dominant Broncos defense. And guess what? In order for them not to make the Super Bowl, they had to miss an extra point, and then Brady had to just miss an open receiver on a two-point conversion, or else they maybe would have gone to the last four Super Bowls. This team is different, and while Brady is the greatest quarterback I've ever seen, and he's the most, maybe the most clutch athlete I've ever seen, certainly on the short list.
Not he is going.
He just hasn't been playing at 75% of that level this year. Now, maybe you're right. Maybe he's got something saved up for the very, very end.
Well, I'm not saying he's going to save it. I'm just saying all these games are independent of each other. Magic can happen. You get in one of those games, and I would be naive to think, man, Tom Brady doesn't go out in some type of great fashion. And a lot of it's based on a couple things. Look, all these teams have warts. All of them do. It's just a matter of which one's going to come out when we get in the playoffs. The Patriot and the Patriot way, yeah, it might not have worked for November. Yeah, that might not have worked, be working for December. But who do you trust more? And I can't say right now I trust Patty Mahomes, Andy Reid, Kansas City fan base, scared out their mind, one of their fans right here, pom-poms under the table, kicking and screaming. Ah! Yeah. Okay? Yeah. Like, all of them have warts. I do believe this is that odd year. Now, this is also that odd year where you want to be the Texans. You want to be the Chiefs because it does look like this Patriot team is not as equipped as what
Here's what ends up happening to you, though. When you're on a good team, and you've been on some good teams, I've been on some really good teams as well. Even when you're struggling, I've been on a Super Bowl team that won two games late in the season. Lost two games in December late in the season. I've been on a team that went on a run. When you're a good team, you know you're that close. You're one play away from all of a sudden, boom, we got confidence again. And New England just needs to make that one play.
That coach puts in those five plays during the game that made the difference. Watch this. This guy takes a bad angle. We make a tackle here. If we pick the blitz pickup, that's the difference a lot of time when you start seeing that.
And sometimes a coach will come in and say, hey, guys, look at, and they'll put it up and say, if we do this, we're going to get this at this point. At some point in the game, we're getting this. And when we get it, we're going to absolutely eviscerate them. We're going to get them with this. And all of a sudden, you go out and you execute it, and you're like, oh, here we go. You know, that's all it takes. Like, bad teams are waiting for something bad to happen because their coaches have been preaching to them the whole time, hey, man, we're going to have to play perfect to win this game. We're going to have to make sure, this is New England. We got to play great against them. We can't make a mistake. And as soon as you make a mistake, they all go, uh-oh, here we go.
Stink,
the exact opposite is true for good teams.
I know you were calling the game this week in Baltimore and everything. But when Tom Brady had the ball, if everyone at the table was being honest, we thought they were going to score.
See, but that's my concern. My concern is what Stink's talking about is they just needed that one moment, and they had that opportunity after playing a poor game against Pittsburgh to kill the Steelers, move back into the two seed, and say, you know what, Kansas City, Los Angeles, slip up one time, we're going to back our way into the one seed. They had the moment. They had first and 10 at the 20 with 30 seconds left to rip one away from Pittsburgh. And you know what? Brady throwing off his back foot and missing people. And that did not...
There's going to be some bigger moments, though, Nick.
It's going to have to be in the playoffs because...
I mean, they got nine wins, okay?
Sure, but they're not going to have that rallying moment against the Bills or Jets. So if the moment's going to come, it's going to have to come in an elimination.
All right, I'm going down swinging. you appropriated all your faith over the last couple years to the Cavs, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm appropriating Jenna and this whole show, the rest of it. We're going to appropriate that to the Pats.
Okay.
All right?
All right, no problem.
All right, that's what we're going to do.
It's been a smart bet the last 2 decades.
We're going to take a break so we can appropriate in our own private time. Mm-hmm. Mark, stick around. Coming up. With Sunday's loss to the Colts, the reality check the Cowboys needed next on First Things First. Coming up on New Year's Eve, hope you have no plans. The Red Box Bowl kicks off between Oregon and Michigan State at 2:30 Eastern on Fox, then flip over to FS1. Number 17, Utah battles number 22, Northwestern in the San Diego County Credit Union Holiday Bowl at 6:30 Eastern, or catch it all on the Fox Sports app. And then we will be here New Year's Day morning, right?
Absolutely right, yep.
All right, good stuff. Back here with Stink. We're going viral. The Saints took down the Panthers 12-9 last night to improve to a league best 12-2 on the season. And Drew Brees' pregame speech had us all ready to strap on a helmet.
Let's go, baby. Four quarters, four things. Start fast, baby. Build momentum. Stay in the moment. And then put your foot on their throat. Start fast, build momentum. Stay in the moment, and then step on their throat.
Let's go, man.
These are all great sound bites. Drew Brees does these typically before every game. Typically, they're less than 30 seconds, and he's never repeated one of the messages. Every week, he's got a different theme for the team. Yeah, it's like a coach on the field. It's pretty special
stuff.
Glad we are able to get that audio and that video.
Yeah, I didn't want to put on a helmet.
You're done.
I just was going to watch. So I just letting you know that I wasn't inspired to put on a helmet.
You got to start that, C. Before every show, give us a little something. No, yeah, well, we do the show every single day. There you go. Time for stories to start your morning. Yesterday, Eagles head coach Doug Peterson said Nick Foles will start again on Sunday against the Texans. Peterson also said that Carson Wentz has not been placed on IR yet, but probably wouldn't be able to go anyway. CeCe, how's the Eagles' offense different with Foles under center?
Well, you still have to, you're going to run the same offense, but what they started doing was they started throwing the ball down the field. Typically, when you sit down with the quarterback coach on Friday, is the things, what do you feel comfortable doing? Each quarterback has his own things. Alshon Jeffrey is always a big part of that when Nick Foles is in there, so he's going to get more deep throws down the field. Carson Wentz, it's not as if he doesn't have a strong arm. It's just what they prefer, what the quarterback likes seeing, and they've made a noticeable change since Carson's been injured.
Nick Foles' favorite targets, Jeffrey. Carson Wentz' favorite targets, Zach Ertz. Like, those are very obviously true. And for the Eagles, when they've had their success under Foles, it's when they've treated the offense most similar to when Wentz is out there, not when they were trying to constrict it like they were early in 2017 when he took over.
On to the Broncos now. According to a report, John Elway tried to replace current head coach Vance Joseph with Mike Shanahan before the season. Stinky won two Super Bowls with Elway and Shanahan. What do you make of the report?
Well, I mean, they were upset. They're upset with the way that things went last year. And he tried to make a move. And obviously Joe Ellis, who is kind of the grand poobah of things football over there, did not allow that to happen, did not want Shanahan back. And also, you know, you look at this would be, if they do fire Vance Joseph even now, it'd be four head coaches in, what, six seasons?
Yeah.
I understand that it's a bad look right now to fire a guy after one season. Especially without a quarterback.
Did Vance Joseph seal his fate by kicking a field goal down four with 4.5 minutes left?
I don't think that. I think losing at home, losing to San Francisco, winning three straight, getting back to 6-6, and then all of a sudden not being able to compete against a 49er team and a Cleveland team in your own house,
I think that seals your feet. That will not accept losing. The Denver Broncos
have not had consecutive losing seasons since 71-72.
On to the Rams. Their offense has been a little bit putrid the last 3 weeks.
Putrid.
Jared Goff ranks last in the NFL in passer rating over that stretch.
Wow.
That's pretty putrid. Head coach Sean McVay says the Rams need to, quote, figure it out. RTC, what do the Rams need to cure to get their offensive struggles back on?
Sting, do you remember the first, like, 8 weeks of the season?
Yeah.
We were getting all these videos and sound bites of Sean McVay and his photographic memory. Well, what did you run in this play last year? Oh, I think we ran a scat 23 on tailback angle. And then what did you run on? When was the last time Todd Gurley, with your photographic memory, touched the ball 20 times? All right? Won't you do that for me, little baby genius? All right? Not looking so smart right now.
Genius.
Like, I mean, seriously.
Jeez.
Like, I mean, Todd Gurley is the best football player on their offense.
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't he touching the ball? Now, give me some excuse at the end of the season. Hey, maybe it's a little Cam Newton thing. Maybe he's nicked up a little bit. I'm willing to accept that. But when a player is out there, especially like Todd Gurley, and you say, well, Emmitt Smith, when he was playing his heyday, when he was banged up, he used to be out there, and they used to have him out there to run the play fake because you got the same effect as him when he was healthy. You don't see that with defenses with Todd Gurley now. They are not respecting those play fakes. They are not respecting those speed sweeps as much as they were doing during earlier part of the season where defenses were losing focus as far as their eyes because there were so many things to look at. Now they look fairly easy to defend. Let's put some pressure on that quarterback. He does not like pressure, and they don't have a slot receiver. They have not replaced the productivity of Cooper Kupp, and it's an issue. And I believe that that's what you have a young coach for. I saw earlier in the season, they were copying a number of plays that Kansas City and other teams were running. Why haven't they gone back to that? I mean, it's a copycat league. Everyone's looking at the same stuff. Like, what happened to that? So I'm concerned as they go down this stretch drive, how this team is going to develop with all these superstars, all these different personalities. The offense has been disappointing the last month.
Yeah, I think you look at them, and I've done a couple of their games early, and at their core, they're a wide zone handoff team.
Yeah, want to punch you in the mouth.
Right. And they do everything out of 11 personnel. They were at nine. The only time they were out of 11 personnel, which is three wide receivers, one tight end, one back, was in goal line and kill the clock.
It was like the Giants the last year under McAdoo.
Yeah.
Or the first year under McAdoo. They're in 11 personnel at all times.
At all times. But what they were able to do out of that is they were able, as you said, all the speed sweeps, all getting you east and west, spreading you out. And at their core, they're saying, we're going to spread you out in 11, but we're still going to run a downhill run play. So we're going to get 19 handoff or 18 handoff. Mm-hmm. We're going to come down 18 handoff, and then we're going to get the cutbacks in there. But I think Cooper Kupp, you mentioned Cooper Kupp, I think he was huge because he ran the dirty stuff underneath. He ran the shallow cross stuff. He was the underneath receiver, but he was also an edge presence guy because when you run that 11 personnel, you have to have a receiver cutting off the edge.
Yes.
You've got to have a receiver on the backside or on the front side, depending on what you're doing. And he's got to be involved in that blocking game. And they are missing him from a running standpoint. A dramatic change without him in there.
So I'm not going to be as hard on Sean McVay as C was, maybe because I'm partial to young, smart people who people think might be a little too young for their job.
Yeah, being smart is overrated.
However.
You're proof of that. And Sean McVay right now is plenty proof of it.
Okay, well, I don't know if he's proof of it yet, but I do think he's got to now develop his counterpunch. Because here's what I think defenses are doing. Robert Mays pointed this out. I thought it was a really good point. The Rams, because they're always in this 11 personnel, so much of what they do pre-snap is window dressing. It's just to distract you. They are planning to just run it right at you. And I think after 7, 8, 9, 10 weeks, I think defenses are saying, you know what? Do not pay attention to that nonsense. And know what our plan is going into the play. Whatever movement they do, obviously you have to adjust somewhat, but don't let it distract you from what we think they are going to do. And so that, I think, has hurt them, and that's where McVay's got to be better. But the other thing that's really hurt them is what you said. Their quarterback is the lowest-rated passer over the last 3 weeks. And so if Jared Goff has an inability to play with pressure at his feet, if he has an inability to play when the play action is not devastating, which is what it had been early in the year, then you start to ask yourself, how much can Sean McVay do if the quarterback is limiting them at the moment? Because the best player on their offense is Todd Gurley by a wide margin. And I don't know if he's hurt or not. I do know he had 8 touches in the first half 2 weeks ago. Last week, I think he had, 18 touches for the game. Like, they are not using him to the level you would think they would, given the fact that he was on the short MVP candidate.
There is no team in the NFL, and I don't care how smart you are, you can run one formation and say, I'm that much better than you. It's like Golden State saying, you know what? We're going to play our, what is it?
The small ball.
What do they call it?
The Hamptons 5.
The Hampton 5. You know what?
Whole game.
There ain't no answer for it. Mm-hmm. There ain't no answer. Man, we got an answer for you for the personnel of three wide receivers, especially without Cooper Kupp being in.
What did Greg Williams tell you and I in a meeting when we were doing the game Cleveland, Carolina? Head coach of the Cleveland Browns said, culture beats strategy any day of the week. Understand who you are. Understand what your culture is, understand the players you have, understand your identity, and cram it down somebody's throat.
I thought you were going to tell me he told us how smart he was. No. I mean, his wife had 50.
Stop it.
Could have gone in any different direction.
While you guys were there, did he get any extra job offers? I didn't know. I know he's gotten a bunch.
Yeah.
Speaking of offensive identity, onto the Cowboys now. After a 5-game win streak where the Cowboys appear to be doing everything right, they went to Indy on Sunday and did what appeared to be everything wrong. Held scoreless for the first time since 2003, Cowboys are averaging just 14.7 points per game on the road this season, tied for the fewest in the NFL along with the Cardinals. Mm. But leave it to Ezekiel Elliott to find the silver lining after Sunday's loss.
A loss like this was very much needed. I think it's better for us in the grand scheme of the season, and I think we need to get put in check. I think we needed a reality check, and I think that we needed someone kind of just remind us, you know, that, you know, we still have a lot of ball left, and I mean, nothing's going to be given. We got to go out there and take everything.
All right, let's piggyback off what Zeke said, Stink. What could this team learn from the way they lost the game?
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of things that you look at when you lose a game like that, just from the way you prepare, the way you're ready. They have physically worn people out. Mm-hmm. And that's where they've won. They've won the line of scrimmage. They have physically worn people out over the last several weeks. You know what?
They got worn out.
Yeah. Indianapolis came in there, and I'm telling you, Quentin Nelson, if he's not on a very short list of Offensive Rookie of the Year, then you just don't know what you're looking at. Mm-hmm. Because he dominated the line of scrimmage. I mean, absolutely dominated the line of scrimmage. They got up on the linebackers. One thing they haven't been able to do against the Dallas defense, and you know what, we have the soundbite from Zeke, but that Dallas defense has dominated up front and let their linebackers run free.
Yes.
It's just been tackling practice.
Absolutely.
Defensive
tackles have done a great job of holding, making sure they react and take it so the linebackers had space to be able to come down here.
Right. Flow, fast flow, hit the hole, come down, make tackles at the line of scrimmage. I'm telling you what, they absolutely mosh-pitted them. I mean, they were just running through them, getting to the second level, getting on those linebackers. And, you know, Mack had plenty of yards to go in there. I think he had 139 yards. Mm-hmm. But when you watch it, they just got dominant. What they've done to everybody else, dominate both lines of scrimmage, they went to Indy, and they absolutely got throttled in that part of the game.
And so everything you're saying is obviously correct, that the Cowboys lost to a team that for a weekend took on the Cowboys' identity. Andrew Luck wasn't great.
Yeah.
Andrew Luck was fine. He wasn't bad, but he was not asked to do much. It was the Colts blocking a punt and then stopping them on fourth down and then running down their throat repeatedly with Luck just making a few plays.
Blocking a field goal attempt.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said blocking a punt. Pardon me. Correct. Blocking a field goal attempt on the opening drive. Here's the real silver lining for the Cowboys. If there's such a thing as an NFL game that doesn't really mean that much, it was the one the Cowboys were playing last week. They're not going to get to a bye. They're not going to catch the Bears for the three. They're not going to get caught in their division. They're essentially locked into that four seed, assuming they don't have a total collapse down the stretch, which would include a home loss to Tampa. So maybe it was good to get a bit of a reality check of we're not as good as we looked over this winning streak. We do still have some not only serious flaws, but if we do not play our very specific style of football, we not only can get beat, we can get whooped, we can get shut out, which is hard to get shut out in the NFL in 2018 unless you're in some horrific weather situation. And so I think it was a reminder that if we lose the battle up front, if we are not dominant on the ground, we don't have the type of offense that's going to come back down from two scores. Mm. Two scores might as well be six scores. It's over. So I think it was a good reminder for Dallas in a game that didn't actually hurt them at all as far as what their ultimate goals are. They're still going to have a home playoff game. They're still going to win that division.
They also came out flat, and they realized that one of the reasons they won the five games prior is because they all treated it like what Jerry Jones said, like it was a Super Bowl game.
But I know one thing, though. You can't come out and play 16, 17. Weeks on adrenaline.
No.
You're going to have those games where you come out a little bit flat, and at some point you got to say, hey, guys, you know what? We got to go back to what we are, put on the switch, and go out and play.
Right. When you're in that locker room and being one of the leaders and also being one of the guys that people are looking for some type of juice, like on a daily basis, and if they look at me and I'm not doing a whole bunch of talking, they say, what up? What's up today, C? And I said, man, today I got my lunch pail. It ain't about being no cheerleader. Like, it's about doing work. You don't have that in you every single game. But one thing that this young team, and it's hard in Dallas, when you play in as nice a place as Jerry World is, and as much of support as they have there, and as Charles Barkley said, role players play better at home than they do on the road. And role players play with more energy at home than they do on the road. And that's what I saw in Indy.
Let me just ask you this before we break. Are you concerned about the injuries on the offensive line as a former lineman? Dak's been sacked a lot the last couple games.
Yeah, but there's a lot of things that go into that. Yes, obviously, you're always concerned about injuries. You're always concerned about personnel up front. And, you know, there's a reason guys are backups in this league, because they're not ready to play. I mean, that's the bottom line. And there's been no more glaring. You know, we talk about quarterbacks all the time from the college standpoint. I talk to general managers every week. Offensive line and offensive line depth is it's probably the weakest it's ever been. And guys aren't being developed. And now you can't develop him in season because there's no practice time and you can't put on pads. And all the things that you do as an offensive lineman, you can't truly work on those things. So, yeah, that's a huge concern.
Right.
It's a giant concern. Now, some of that is Dak holds the ball too long. Some of it is you got to understand the situation. You got to be able to throw it away. But the bottom line, yeah, that should be a concern for everybody in Dallas.
To your point, Jenna, Dak's been sacked 51 times this year and has been under pressure on 30% of his dropbacks. Part of that is on him, but part of it is they really miss Travis Frederick. We saw in the Colts game, they were down at one in that Colts game for a large portion of it. They didn't have their left guard, center, or right guard that they thought they were going to have going into the season, and that was one of the reasons they couldn't get off the ball.
There is no replacement. Travis Frederick, best center in football. Right guard, Zach Martin, best guard in football. There are no replacements. The depth thing is real, but there are no replacements for the best at their position.
All right, Mark, stick around. Coming up, what has gone so wrong for Cam Newton and the Panthers? That's next on First Things First. Back here with Stink, we're talking Saints and Panthers. Let's go first quarter. Fourth and two at the 50. North Turner dips into the bag of tricks, dials this up. Christian McCaffrey, the pass that goes for a touchdown. It's 7-0 Panthers.
And he looked like he's towing a boat.
Right? Fourth quarter. Alvin Kamara capping off the 11-play drive with a 16-yard run to take the lead. Panthers, though, hung around down three. That was one last chance, but the drive ends with an incomplete pass. Saints hold on to win. They are now one win away from clinching the one seed. On the other side, the Panthers' playoff hopes just about done. Here is Cam Newton after the game.
I think it's disheartening for me, you know, just because so much invested time that you put in. You know, I don't, you know, want to, you know, play the "woe is me" game, but, you know, we just got to be better. I got to be better. And that's what's so frustrating when you want it so bad and you push, you put so much on your plate, and you know it doesn't come down to you, but at the end of the day, you just got to uphold your end of the bargain. Obviously, my arm hasn't allowed me to do a lot of practice. Been on a pitch count for a long time. But at the end of the day, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, that's not no scapegoat. That's not, you know, something that I want to, you know, people to bail me out on. It's just something that, you know, is reality.
Stink, Cam Newton spent a good deal of that press conference talking about the shoulder. We don't know how long it's been bothering him. But what has happened to this team, to not only Cam Newton, but to this Panthers offense?
Well, I mean, think about this. Week one, they lose their starting left tackle. And they get a guy off the street who shows up Wednesday and then plays every play on Sunday. Like, and again, we just talked about backup offensive linemen or backup offensive linemen for a reason.
And they had lost their right tackle in training camp.
Right, and so they lost their right tackle, and then they had to move the backup, who's actually played, Moten has played really well over right tackle. But they have had a lot of issues up front. So that's been a big issue for them on the offensive side of the ball. I will tell you about this. I appreciate the fact that Cam Newton is playing with a significant injury. And I will tell you how difficult it is to play when you're injured, when you don't get to practice. The difference between me playing injured and Cam Newton playing injured is there's a difference there. Because at the position I played, even if I can't use great technique because I don't get to practice and because I'm injured, I can turn everything at the position I played into a street fight. I can bloody your nose, and the bottom line is I may not grade out very well, but I won't cost my football team a game.
You can hide your injuries in that little phone booth.
Right.
And because all the years you had of not practicing and honing your craft as a guy who's going to be injured, is not going to be practicing all the time, but still the efficiency, we're expecting that.
Yeah,
but I look
at, he's got some dirty tricks, I would imagine.
Right, I look at the quarterback position. Man, you're out there in the open, and now all of a sudden you've got a shoulder that's truly bothering you. You have watch practice, but you haven't made those throws in practice. You're late with your throws. I mean, I've seen him dirt balls that just like that's an injury issue, or that's a shoulder issue, or that's a lack of practice issue. And this is something that we've seen. You know, Chris and I did a game. I'll do his game again this coming week. We did his game. You could see it.
Yep.
I mean, you could just see it. And here's the deal, though. Not using it as an excuse, man. if I go out there and I'm healthy enough to go out there, I have to play better. Yeah. And he owns it. And so bottom line is I appreciate it. They've had a lot of things go on. Defensively, their back end has not been good. Their corners are young. Their corners have gotten attacked. They have made mistakes in coverage on a consistent basis in the back part of their defense. So that's been an issue for them, Chris.
Stink and I stood on the field next to Cam Newton throwing passes, warming up with one of the coaches and one of the therapists, doing a number of exercises, get his arm warmed up. And we stood on the field and watched Baker Mayfield throw the football. Now, you're talking about a difference in night and day. Now, Stink and I cover the game, so you have to be careful in how you cover these guys' injuries. Now we can talk about it because Cam has said, I've been injured, but it wasn't our job to be able to point out his injury because of not only in the NFL, it affects the line. It affects, has he gotten treatment? If he hadn't gotten treatment or reported it, they would have been subject to the NFL saying something to the Carolina Panthers. And when you start telling people I'm injured, man, they come after you every week. You put in the report, I got a bad ankle. Man, ain't nobody tackling you up on your shoulders, around your neck. Every tackle is at your knee and around your ankle. So in being around Cam and around Carolina, the Panthers team, man, Cam Newton is injured, and that's what we saw last night.
Just a quick question before we move on. I never understood this. When you're in the league 5-10 years, why is practice so important? Isn't so much of it timing, knowing your receivers,
well,
all that relationship?
Exactly why it's important, because every week that timing is different because you're running different stuff. You're game planning for a specific opponent. So some opponents play a boatload of man coverage. So okay. I want to run those again. I want to run my man beaters. Some will play a lot more zone coverage depending on where you are on the field. So now all of a sudden I have these zone beating routes. You know, if I'm in a cover two, I've got, you know, I'm running some type of flat sail combination. And that takes timing. That takes work. And that takes, you know, that takes practice.
And Jenna, for example, for you, you've been in television 10 plus years, very high level. But your rhythms are different if C's not here. And while you've been here 10 years, DJ Moore been in the league 14 weeks.
Sure.
Curtis Samuel been in the league a year and 14 weeks.
Yeah.
Same with Christian McCaffrey.
Yes.
It's one of the reasons Greg Olsen's loss has been a big one, because that is one guy that Cam, probably even absent of practice, has a bit of a rapport with. But I one of the things that I think is should not be missed here, and you alluded to it earlier, C, is Cam, for a long time in his career, his play was part of the discussion around him, but also how he handled himself in those settings was part of the discussion, and it was a big negative part of the discussion. Cam Newton has gone out of his way to not use the injuries as an excuse or as an explanation. Last night, he, I think, finally, for the first time, was saying, hey, there is a bit of an explanation here, but I know I'm out there. He is handling what has to be as frustrating of a scenario as one can imagine, like an absolute pro. Through 11 weeks of the year, he was completing 70% of his passes, had 22 touchdowns, 7 picks, and a quarterback rating near 100. Over the last 3 weeks, he's got a quarterback rating in the 60s. He's got 6 more interceptions to only 2 touchdowns, and he's completing around 55% or 60% of his passes. Pardon me. Like, I think he was dealing with a shoulder injury from the beginning of the year, but it has gotten much worse over the course of the year.
What happens when you can't practice and you can't practice at quarterback is typically in practice, if you have a tight end like Greg Olsen, he's going against a scout team linebacker. So the speed and the anticipation, the skill level of that scout team guy, that linebacker and that corner is totally different than what Cam is seeing in the game. Now, you play against someone like the Saints had last night, as fast as they were moving, it's a different game. So not only the practice, how important it becomes, man, practice is always going to be important. Man, I love Allen Iverson, but when he said that, man, that was one of the dumbest things ever, especially referring to NFL, because everything, you only play a few games, you're practicing 5 days a week, and that overall timing and not being able to do it. And Jenna, it's like you teaching a class full of students. Every student has a different beat, has a different rhythm. Every wide receiver, every tight end, every running back has a different beat, has a different rhythm, has a different gait to which they run to and which they're going to stop at. So that's what we see in the game where Cam, on the fourth down, a little behind the guy. Christian McCaffrey, a great running back, runs a great route. He's ahead of the running back because he doesn't have the anticipation, because he does not have immaculate fundamentals where he can get his legs ready to throw and then his arm will follow. Cam throws with his trunk and with his shoulder. That's why he's been so inconsistent. So he's going to get his shoulder fixed, but he's got to keep working on his footwork that we saw in week 1 to 11. That part right there still could use work, and he has not mastered that.
And every guy learns differently, too. Some guys are visual. Some guys are auditory. Some guys just depends on how you absorb information and then how you use it on the practice field. But I've never been around a quarterback that wasn't a rep hog. Every guy wants every rep. They're all rep hogs, you know? They all want every rep because they want to prepare that way during the week of practice. And when you can't practice, man, it definitely hurts your game, and we're seeing that kind of manifest itself here in the last 3-4 weeks.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.